inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
Today on the podcast, we're going to be exploring whether it makes sense to use your retirement accounts to buy a rental property. For some people, I think it makes a lot of sense. For other people, I don't think it makes sense at all. So what we're going to do is talk to two different investors that have two completely different views on this topic so that you can decide what's best for you. Our first guest owns a lot of rental properties, but he thinks it's a bad idea to use your retirement funds to buy a rental. So we're going to hear why and see what he has to say. And then after that, we'll explore the other side of the issue and we'll talk to someone that owns rental properties with his IRA and also outside of his IRA. And we'll hear why he thinks owning a rental property in your IRA is a great idea. So let's take a real quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll meet our first guest. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified. And I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Are you looking for actionable steps to create wealth and passive income? As a top-ranked business and investing podcast with over 800 five-star reviews, the Passive Real Estate Investing Show is packed with strategies and insight for putting money in your pocket. Marco Santarelli from Narada Real Estate Investments brings his expertise and knowledge on both passive and turnkey real estate investing, and he provides listeners with helpful tools and tips to create the wealth you've always wanted. Head over to iTunes or Google Play today and subscribe to Passive Real Estate Investing Podcast, or visit PassiveRealEstateInvesting.com. That's PassiveRealEstateInvesting.com. Our first guest today is Corey Binsfield. Corey, you have been on the show multiple times. This is actually your fourth appearance with us, so I'm sure everyone is familiar with you. But in case they're not, why don't we start with you giving us just a real quick bio so people know who you are and where you're coming from.
Yeah, sure. So my background is I'm a financial advisor here in Minnesota. And I decided to get into real estate on the side, just to diversify things, because I noticed, being a financial advisor, your income's tied to the stock market. And so I got into real estate in 1998, and the goal was to buy 10 duplexes. And then after I hit that goal early, I was like, wow, this real estate's kind of fun. So then I decided to 10 exit, and now I've got I think like 121 units now.
And none of these units are owned in your IRA, right?
No.
Okay. Now, you're against buying properties in an IRA. You just don't think it's a good idea, right?
That's correct.
Now, why is that? Like overall, though, we'll get into some of the specifics, but like just big picture, why do you think it's a bad idea to own in an IRA?
From just a 30,000 foot view, you know, we're flying across the Midwest here, looking down below. But yep. I think my biggest pet peeve is this: you're taking a tax favored asset and you're putting it into an IRA, which is not a tax favored asset. If you look at, you know, the life of the asset, yes, you get a tax deduction up front when you're putting money in the IRA, but you pull the money out later and it's being taxed at the highest tax rates that you'll ever see, just right, because you don't get to deal with the favorable rates of capital gains and so on.
Right. So there are a ton of tax breaks that you get as a real estate investor that really they just kind of get canceled out when it's in an IRA, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So let's go through some of that. So probably the biggest benefit of owning real estate is the depreciation benefit that's kind of like a phantom expense that makes it look like you're making less money.
That's right.
But you lose that, right? You don't get depreciation if you own it in an IRA.
Yeah, I mean, depreciation is just the most amazing tax benefit out there, because here you are, you have an expense that you don't have to pull money out to achieve it. You know, like business owners will typically buy a big vehicle to get a write-off this year, you know, on their taxes. But you buy real estate and you immediately get a tax deduction, even though you basically didn't spend a nickel out of your pocket.
Right.
And so the problem with buying this in your IRA or even 401k is that you end up losing that entire tax benefit, as well as a lot of other important benefits, which is, you know, you, if you're a real estate professional designation, you can group all your properties together, and then you can actually come up with some pretty sizable write-offs against your wages, just using that little tax benefit.
Right. Yeah, so that is a huge benefit that, we get that you lose, but that's not the only one that we lose. The other thing is capital gains. That capital gains, maybe tell us how that works, like capital gains versus how you would pay taxes out of your IRA.
Yeah, so depending on your tax bracket, capital gains rate will be if you're if you could structure your income in a given year where it's basically zero or not zero income, but really low, you pay 0% capital gains tax all the way up to at the max, I believe, is around 20%. And so if you think about capital gains, and then you compare that to an IRA or 401k and pulling money out, you know, at age 59 and a half or higher, you end up incurring a higher tax, because I think the goal of most people or listeners on the show would be to have lots of income when you retire.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have lots of income when you retire, you're easily going to be in the 30 to 45% tax bracket when you include both the federal and state taxes. So you compare that, you know, 30 to 45% tax rate to a, let's say a 15% tax rate on capital gains. It's just, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Right.
In fact, I would go on to say, and this is pretty controversial coming from a financial advisor, but if you found a smoking hot real estate deal and you could not raise the money without tapping your 401k or your IRA, then I would actually pay the penalty and pull the cash out of the money or out of the IRA or 401k just to get the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's a big hit. I mean, that penalty is 10% on top of whatever your tax rate is.
Yeah. You typically lose about half the money to Uncle Sam. It's pretty.
So,
but there is another way to do that, though. And this, I've actually purchased three properties this way. I didn't fund the entire down payment, but definitely a sizable chunk of it. And what I did was, I've had a Roth IRA ever since they were created back in the early, or I think it was like the mid 90s they first came out. And so what I ended up doing was I used my Roth IRA, and you can pull out your original basis, you know, your original contribution to the Roth. And as long as you've had the Roth for 5 years or longer, you can pull out your original investment. And I actually did that on three different properties to help close the deal.
Okay. Yeah. That's
and that's all tax-free, no penalties or whatever, you know?
Right. And that's another, I mean, so you, doing it that way, you're still not buying it in your IRA, but you're using the IRA to help you buy the property.
Yep. And then the other scenario was my very first property. I was able to buy that triplex I talked about, I believe, on our first show I was on. And that one I actually used my IRA and what's called a first-time home buyer's exemption. So, you know, if someone's pretty clever and they got a large 401k or an IRA or even a, you know, mid-sized one, they could do a house hack where they buy a fourplex and pull some of the money out of their IRA without penalty.
Right. Yeah, so your IRA can help you, but actually buying it in the IRA might not be the best idea. All right, let's try to hit on a couple of other things real quick. Now, does your opinion change if somebody had a Roth IRA? Like, would it ever make sense, because of the tax benefits of a Roth IRA, would it ever make sense to buy properties in a Roth IRA?
Wow, that's a tough one. I guess I haven't wrapped my head around that one yet.
Okay.
I guess, you know, you could definitely make the case for doing the Roth IRA, but then we haven't even addressed the other part, which is lack of control. So that's where I'm on the fence on that one.
Okay.
I'm not really positive if that's the solution to buying, you know, property within a qualified retirement plan.
Okay. All right. Now let's talk about the loss of control. So tell me about this.
All right. So if you have it, basically you got to think of your IRA as like this separate fiduciary. Okay. Almost like this trust account. Mm-hmm. And you cannot have any conflicts of interest with this account. It has to be completely separate. And so as a result of that, the IRS has come up with rules stating what you can and cannot do with the real estate within the IRA. And the problem becomes when, let's say you need a new roof and there's not enough money in the IRA. You can't just take money out of your bank account or your savings account and fix the roof. But basically, you can't just pay cash for a repair like a roof and add it to your IRA because you have, you know, contribution limits. And if you do fix it, okay, with your own money, then they could disqualify the entire IRA. And as a result of that, you now pay taxes on this disqualified IRA. And if it's, you know, $100,000, $200,000, that's a pretty big tax hit.
I mean, so you could basically lose half of that in taxes.
Easily. Yeah.
All right. So that's something you definitely got to be careful. So there's a lot more laws and regulations that you have to be aware of and make sure you never violate these, or else there is a huge consequence you're going to face tax-wise.
Well, the other part, too, is you got to value this asset every year. You know, I mean, I don't know exact what timeline it is, but you do have to go out and get bona fide appraisals, you know, that show what your asset is worth each year so you can determine the value of your IRA for tax purposes.
Right.
And so that's going to be there's a lot of expenses involved.
Right.
You know, just little hidden fees that you want to be aware of if you talk to like these, you know, self-directed IRA custodians that make it sound like it's super easy.
Right.
But the nuances there are great. And I honestly wouldn't do it unless I had a full-blown tax attorney that specialized in just this area of law.
Right. Now, the other thing I wanted to bring up was that if you were to pass away one day, I mean, I guess everyone's going to pass away one day, but when you do, tell me how the taxes work if you pass away and your kids or whoever inherit your real estate.
Okay, so let's say you pass away and you have $2 million in real estate. And your original cost on it was $1 million. So in theory, you have a $1 million gain, which is just huge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Well, the beauty of real estate and basically most non-qualified assets. So basically this works with, you know, your regular investment accounts as well. Anything that's outside of a retirement plan. There's this thing called a step up in basis. So basically they value your real estate on the day you die. That becomes a new value, and then whoever inherits the real estate can basically sell it all tax-free. It's amazing.
That really is amazing. So let me just review that. If you own real estate outside of an IRA, your kids would inherit $2 million, and the whole thing is tax-free. If the real estate is in the IRA, your kids have to pay taxes on $2 million. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Let's call it the real estate IRA that's worth $2 million. If they sold it all that year because you want to distribute the assets, which you probably would have to if you had two or three kids.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine two or three kids wanting to keep the real estate in the IRA because someone's going to want their money.
Right.
But that's going to create a fairly large tax event. There's a way around it where you can do this thing called a stretch IRA where you stretch it out based upon the beneficiaries' date of birth, and then you can take, in essence, minimum distributions over your lifetime to minimize the tax hit. But once again, you're tying up an asset into a qualified plan, and it's really difficult to get that money without paying a lot of taxes.
Right. And then the last thing I want to bring up is just the whole reason that we own real estate is for the cash flow. So we don't get any cash flow.
That's the only reason we buy real estate.
Right. So you don't get any cash flow today. You've got to wait till you're 59 and a half to actually take any cash off the off the real estate. So, all right. So
right now I've got a daughter. We're looking at colleges and we're booking flights to different places. And my real estate is basically spitting off cash flow, and I'm able to buy these plane tickets rather than drive 6 or 12 hours. And that same cash flow is going to put her through college.
Right. So, yeah, I mean,
you can't do that with a real estate IRA, you know?
Right. Right. Well, Corey, thank you so much for sharing this information. We're going to hear the other side here of it in a second. But before we get into that, if someone wants to learn more about you, give us your website and tell us where people can find you online.
So I've got a little blog. It's more of a hobby, but it's called 10to million.com, based on my original goal of to buy 10 duplexes and become a millionaire. So it's 10to million, T-E-N, the number 2, and then million.com.
If you want to look that up later on, I'll put a link to Corey's website on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode204. Now for a completely different view on this, let's bring in Joe Facenda. Joe is an investor from Northern Virginia. Joe, you've been listening to Corey. I'm going to assume that you probably disagree with a lot of what he just said, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into it. Before we do, why don't you just give us just a real quick 60-second bio on yourself so we know who you are?
Sure. I've been a realtor in Northern Virginia for almost 30 years now, and started investing in 2003. I guess I'm a little bit slow. I saw some tremendous things that some of my clients were doing and knew I needed to get in the game. So I bought my first property in 2003 outside of my IRA, bought a couple more properties between 2003 and 2008 outside of my IRA. Then I had to take a little hiatus because in 2008, not only did the market turn down and real estate income maybe wasn't what it used to be, but also I had sons starting college, so that took drain on the other side. And then in 2011 or so, I started to learn about investing in an IRA, and it hit me that this is the way that I can expand my portfolio, because while I didn't have as much income and I had college expenses on the personal side, I still had built up a nice retirement IRA. And I decided that's where the money was. And I'm sure for many of your listeners, if we asked them how much they have in their personal account and their retirement account, a vast majority would probably say they have more money in their retirement accounts. So I started to use my IRA to invest, and I bought 5 properties in my IRA.
Awesome. Now, what made you want to buy in your IRA? Were you just not comfortable with the volatility of the stock market?
Well, I think part of it was diversity. I'm not necessarily uncomfortable with the stock market, because I think that there should be balance between stocks and real estate. Not a financial planner, but that's sort of my view on things. I just believe in real estate, of course, and I saw this as the way for me to build my portfolio.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. So you're not looking for cash flow today off any of these properties. You're just kind of banking the cash flow. And then at some point when you retire, this would be an income stream for you?
Correct. Okay. Because when you invest in an IRA, one of the important things to remember is the R in IRA, which is retirement. So any property that you use your IRA to purchase should really be viewed as a retirement vehicle. And so, yes, I am not looking to use the income from these rental properties as current income, but use it as retirement income. There's no hard and fast rule that would say always put a property in an IRA or always use it outside of or invest outside of the IRA. There are certain situations where it's best not to use an IRA. Some where you cannot use an IRA. For instance, if you are the kind of person who would like to fix up your own property, to you're a handy person and you want to work on your rentals, absolutely cannot buy an IRA. You're not allowed to personally benefit from an IRA. So you cannot work on your own properties. If you wanted to buy a vacation rental and maybe use it, you have 14 days where you can use it and you want to spend a night or two there, again, cannot do that in an IRA. It has to be done personally. You cannot buy a rental property where you are renting to a son or a daughter or a parent. So perhaps a college rental, not in an IRA. And any property that you want to move into eventually would not be a good IRA property. So again, it has to be for retirement and for really viewing it as a long-term hold, or even if you were to sell it, money that you would want to keep in the IRA.
Now, one of the things Corey mentioned as one of the big benefits that he sees in owning rental properties is depreciation. And you don't get that in your IRA. Did that factor in at all? Like that, because that is a huge tax savings when you own rentals. Did that factor in at all into your analysis?
Right. Well, it didn't factor into my analysis, but I mean, he's right. That depreciation is a benefit that you get when you purchase outside of an IRA, but inside of an IRA, there is no depreciation. I mean, because there's no tax treatment until you withdraw the money. So we talked about a few of the types of properties that you cannot put into an IRA, and then you start to think, well, if I have this other opportunity, should it go in an IRA or should it go into a traditional account? And to me, the greater the cash flow, the more appropriate is the IRA, because everything that happens to a property outside the IRA is taxed. And if the cash flow is great, even though you're taking depreciation and other things, you still will be taxed on some level of income. And as time goes on and depreciation disappears or whatever, you will be taxed on the income. In the IRA, that money can grow tax-free and generate even more wealth.
Right. Okay. Now, talk me through the other benefit that Corey was talking about, that when you own rental properties, not in an IRA, when you get the cash flow, like you're not really paying that much taxes on it because you have so many write-offs and, you know, with the depreciation. But when you own it in your IRA, when you decide to start withdrawing money, that whole thing is going to be taxed at ordinary income rates. Does that bother you at all, or?
It does not, because again, it's retirement money and money that I won't be withdrawing until retirement time. But let me talk a little bit about when you sell a property, because that's advantage of the IRA versus non-IRA property and the tax treatment of the sale in either situation. Outside of an IRA, you have two choices as to what you can do with the proceeds. You'll have capital gains. You'll get the money, and you can either pay the capital gains and the recaptured depreciation. So oftentimes the basis is a lot lower than people think, because depreciation has driven down the basis. So you can sell your property outside of an IRA and, one, take all the money and pay taxes, or you can do a 1031 exchange, which means you have to buy another property within a certain time frame, which in my experience as a realtor, I've sometimes seen people do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do because they're under these very tight time frames. So outside of an IRA, two options: take the money or do a 1031 exchange. Inside of an IRA, when you sell the property, it's not a taxable event. You can keep all the money in there until the next great opportunity comes by. You can take some of the money and buy stocks within your IRA. You could become a hard money lender. You could lend money out of your IRA.
Sure. Yep.
So you have many more options when you sell in the IRA.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
Conceptually, you could say this is being taxed on production versus consumption. Outside of the IRA, everything that property produces, the income, the buildup of equity, capital gains, all of that is taxed. Inside the IRA, it's not taxed. So if you sold a property outside the IRA, got $100,000, but you want to use $30,000 to buy a car, it doesn't matter. You're taxed on $100,000 because you got $100,000 capital gain. Inside the IRA, you get $100,000 of profit, and you want to buy a $30,000 car, and you withdraw that $30,000, yes, you will be taxed ordinary income on just that $30,000. And you can, so you can spread out your tax liability if you want, or just leave it in there to grow again.
Okay. And another one of the benefits of an IRA is that it's relatively easy to get financing on a rental property when it's inside the IRA, right?
Correct. It's almost, it's easier in many ways to get financing on a property in an IRA than a property outside of an IRA. And again, remember, most people will have more money in an IRA than they have in their disposable personal accounts. So I have financed several of the properties, and it's so easy. It's just amazingly easy. The down payment is about 40%, and it has to be a non-recourse loan. Non-recourse loan means that if the mortgage were not paid, the only recourse the bank has is to take back the property. They can't come after other assets of yours or come after you personally. So it's just a property-based loan. So it's down payment's about 40%. The application is so simple. They ran my Social Security. They got my Social Security number and ran my credit just to make sure I'm not a deadbeat. But they did not ask what I do for a living, how much money I make per year. They didn't have to send out verifications of employment. The only documentation they needed was a statement from my retirement account to show that I had money to purchase the property. And they needed to do an appraisal on the rent to make sure that the rent was at least 25% more than the mortgage payment. So if the rent's 25% more than the mortgage payment, you'll get the loan. And okay. The rates are a little bit higher, and the terms are a little bit shorter than 30 years. But it has to cash flow.
Right.
So it's very, very easy.
Now, one thing that I guess people should be aware of when they're buying in their IRA is that if the property needs a new roof or something major mm-hmm. happens, you can't yes. use your own money to fix that up. So how do you personally deal with that? Like, do you keep a cash buffer in case that the property needs a lot of money to get it operating again?
Well, yes, you it's a very good point, Dan, because you cannot just write a personal check when you have a property in an IRA. All the income needs to go to your IRA custodian, and all the expenses for the property need to come from the IRA custodian. So you cannot just write a check. So you need to have liquid reserves. Now, you might have with your IRA custodian extra money just there just in case something happens, but something large or unexpected could happen. For instance, I had a pipe burst in one of my IRA properties and was about a $10,000 repair and took a while to get the insurance and this and that. So, you know, you need some reserves around that you can work with. But I would hope that nobody using their IRA to buy a property would be completely into real estate, but that they would still have some stocks, some bonds, some other assets that are rather liquid. And it's very easy to go to a brokerage account, sell a stock, and transfer that money to your IRA. So your stocks can be a backup to your self-directed IRA that you're using for real estate.
What kind of fees are involved with like paying the custodian? Is that costly to keep that going every year?
Well, there are some fees involved. There's depending upon your custodian, the fees will vary, but typically there's a quarterly management fee per account or per level of asset, $100, $200, depends on your custodian. And they will charge some type of a transaction fee when you buy or sell a property. Again, rather nominal. And every time they write a check, it might be $5 or $10. So there's a little, you know, there's some fees here or there, but in
but
the
it's
big
not,
picture,
not that much.
I don't think that that's a deciding factor.
No, so
being outside the IRA.
What's your long term plan? Like, do you want to get the properties eventually paid off and then like support yourself with the cash flow in retirement, or what's your game plan?
My long-term game plan would be to continue to acquire properties in the IRA. I really don't think at this point that I'm going to acquire any other properties outside of the IRA unless I sell one of the ones that I currently have outside the IRA and I need to do a 1031. But anything new I'm going to do within the IRA so that I can control the cash that I need in retirement. And yes, I would like to get to a point where I have enough properties free and clear or enough properties cash flowing in whatever way that would support my monthly expenses. But, you know, and the other advantage of the IRA is that I do hope that I live a long life.
Yeah. Don't we all?
All do, right?
Yep.
So I hope I live a long life. And I have seen in my real estate career, I have seen elderly landlords continue to own property because they don't want to pay the taxes when they sell. Maybe they've been an investor in residential real estate. Maybe they're in their 80s or 90s, and they've been a residential investor for 40 or 50 years, and they have a tremendous portfolio, and they depreciated it. Depreciation's gone, you know?
Right.
And if they sold, they have the ability to pay the taxes. It's not going to change their lifestyle, but they just don't want to. So they hold on until they die so that their children will inherit the property at a stepped up basis. But I know that when I'm in my mid 80s, I think I'm going to want to get out of this game, or early 80s, or some point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in an IRA, I can sell that property, keep the proceeds in the IRA, do my minimum withdrawals, whatever, but reinvest in stocks, lend money out, do whatever I want. It's not as demanding as being a landlord.
Right. Yeah, and that's the great thing. You have so many options. I mean, you're not locked in that you have to own real estate. I mean, you could just sit on that cash and withdraw the cash, or, you know, whatever you decide you want to do. That's think, great. Well, Joe, if anybody wants to reach out to you, tell me what's the best way for someone to reach you. Give me your website and how someone can contact you.
Yeah, there are two ways to reach me. You can go to my website, joefacenda.com, F-A-C-E-N-D-A. That's one way to reach me. The other way is through a website that I created called outoftownlandlord.com. Most of my investing has been outside of Northern Virginia. Some great cash flow opportunities in different markets around the country. And whenever I went to a new market, I had trouble finding a realtor who understood investments. And I figured if I was having trouble as a realtor to find a realtor who understood investments, that non-realtors were having trouble as well. So I created a site that connects investors with investor-friendly realtors around the country, outoftownlandlord.com, and you can read about me there and on the Virginia page as well.
Sounds like a great resource. If you want to check out Joe's websites, I've got a link to them on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode 204. We talked about a lot of different tax considerations on the show today, and the tax law can be very complex and it's constantly changing. And what applies in Joe's situation or Corey's situation could be totally different in your situation. So make sure you do things right and talk to a tax professional before you take any action. Speaking of taking action, if you are looking to buy a rental property, whether it's inside your IRA, outside of your IRA, talk to Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She specializes in doing investment loans, and she can help you whether it's trying to get to your first rental property or you've got a big portfolio. She has access to literally dozens of different loan programs and can get you really competitive rates and make the process really simple for you. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will even waive all of the pre-qualification fees for you. You can find out more at RidgeLendingGroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, LendingGroup.com, NMLS 42056. If you're looking to save some money the next time you need to rent a car, I definitely recommend you check out Autoslash.com. This website's pretty cool. I've used it a couple of times. The way that it works is you go to Autoslash.com, you put in the details on where you want to pick up the car, the dates that you need it for, and then Autoslash.com gets to work, and it will find every single discount out there. It will find every promo code. It will check any discounts you may be eligible for, like maybe if you're a AAA member or a Costco member. It will apply all the discounts and get you the cheapest rate out there to rent a car. Now, the magic to AutoSlash is that it doesn't stop working when it finds you a great rate. It continues to search the internet and continues to find better rates. And when it does, it will email you and let you know you can cancel the first reservation with no penalty and rebook a new reservation at the lower rate. The average user will get a couple of different rates, a couple of better rates when they rebook their reservation. And the average user saves 30% off the rate they can find on any other car rental site. So it's really, really very cool. It's totally free and definitely something you want to check out the next time you need to rent a car. The website again is autoslash.com. That's AUTOSLASH, autoslash.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.